Welcome to Sustainability Steps, where we dive deep into important discussions regarding global sustainability. We are your hosts,
Ishan Bharadwaj,
Ishan Akula,
and Shrey Agarwal. Tune in every month, where we'll be joined by experts engaging in discussions about worldwide issues, sustainability efforts and solutions, and inspiring initiatives aimed at creating a more sustainable future for our planet and the people on it. Whether you're deeply passionate about sustainability or are just starting to explore how you can make a difference for our planet, our podcast is here for you. We dive into engaging conversations and offer practical tips to help you along your journey towards a greener, more sustainable lifestyle. Enjoy. Today, we are joined by Kale Black.
So welcome, Kale, to our podcast. So do you want to start off by telling a little bit about yourself? So where did you grow up and how did, early experiences shape your connection to the environment?
Yeah, great question. Thanks so much both for having me on and for just the work that you guys are doing to create more conversation around sustainability. It is super, super important. And I'm going to try and answer that question without giving you my entire life story. But I was born in Mississauga in Ontario, and I lived there until I graduated grade 8 before I moved to Burlington and I did my high school here. And to be honest, like I spent a lot of time outdoors, but I wouldn't necessarily call it nature time. Like I lived in a pretty built up urban environment. So I climbed trees and stuff, but I didn't actually really have like nature experiences until I joined Eco Studies, which was a specialist high skills major program at my high school. I went to Aldershot High School in Burlington. And that really opened my eyes to sort of environmental issues and just what was going on the planet. We had it's a whole semester long course, so we learned about a whole bunch of different environmental issues while at the same time being able to go on like a 6-day canoe trip in Algonquin Park or do like a 2-day hike along the Bruce Trail. So it was a sort of like 1-2 punch of like, hey, you love this? Isn't this so nice? Look at all this fresh air. And then the follow-up of it's really at risk and it's slowly being poisoned and there's things that are really damaging it. So it was very, very helpful and enlightening. And I would also say pretty emotionally overwhelming for me at that time because one of the things I started to think about a lot is the more I was learning, the more I realized like a lot of the things I was doing in my personal life, whether that was just the clothing that I was buying and wearing, whether it was the food I was eating, where I was going to vacation, there was a lot of things that I was doing that were harming the planet that I had no real idea of. So I was a pretty fun-loving, happy kid. I played a lot of video games. I was really into like Yu-Gi-Oh cards in high school. I wouldn't say it was the coolest, but once I got involved in the environment, it became really obvious to me that this is where I wanted to put my focus.
That's great. So I saw that you were also a part of the Burlington Green program since high school. So because we're also in high school, we were kind of wondering like what specific activities that you participated in. So maybe us and then also our listeners can get some inspiration of like what we can also do.
Yeah, really great question. And I'll maybe take it a few steps before Burlington Green that I had eco studies, and that was really my like awareness opener. Like I didn't know a lot of stuff that was happening on the earth. And then it became pretty immediate as like, okay, I want to help. So I actually got involved with the eco club in my school. There was a really wonderful guy named Tom Nagy who had started it the year before, and I basically took it over for him the next year. And to be honest, I didn't really know what to do. I just knew I had a lot of passion and I wanted to do something. And what seemed like the most accessible things is we started a recycling program in our school. And we also started to do fundraising and we had bake sales and we raised money for tree plantings. And that was sort of the two things that were the seemingly most available at the time was recycling and fundraising for planting trees. That seemed like the most direct sort of way to help the planet. But I also, even though that was a great experience and it was a lot of fun and we had some great impact in our school, I also just felt like it wasn't enough, and that sort of led me to outside community organizations. So I had some great stuff going in my school, but it was still a little bubble. And I felt like sometimes I would have only two or three people come to my eco club meetings, and that would be a little disheartening at certain points. And it was actually through my co-op placement that I was able to get in with Burlington Green, and I highly recommend co-op positions to anyone in really like any field that you would like to go into. It just was incredibly helpful for me because I did my co-op with both the City of Burlington in their Environment and Sustainability Department, as well as Burlington Green. So I was able to get some real work experience as to what it was like doing environmental work within a municipality, which I would say is adjacent to most like just bureaucratic structures, like if you're going to work in government or large organizations. And that got my, I guess, toe dipped in the water of that. And at the same time, I had another toe dipped in the different waters of Burlington Green, which is a nonprofit organization, where it registered charity now, but Burlington Green was really the energy of it started as an environmental voice, as an advocacy group where they just were speaking up on environmental issues. And I really liked the immediate grassroots sort of efforts that we didn't have a lot of bureaucracy. There wasn't a lot of different levels of approval that had to be done. We were like, okay, this is what the community needs, and how do we do it? So I would say all of that showed me pretty quickly, through actual work experience, where I wanted to put my efforts in a little bit more focused of a way. And I say that especially was really helpful because prior to that, that was likely my route. Because I didn't know a lot of different options, I was thinking I would probably go to school post-secondary for some sort of environmental studies, and I would probably end up working for a municipality or some organization. And I feel like my experience with Burlington Green really helped to streamline what it is I was interested in and gave me something more hands-on to focus on. So I'll add on to that just because your question was sort of about personal actions, that one of the things that became really apparent, like I said, with my eco studies experience, and I was like, oh my goodness, it's my food, it's my clothing, it's all of those different things, is I really like the quote from a guy named Paulo Coelho, and he says, the world responds to your example and not your opinion. And I find that in environmental work, there's the really great stuff I mentioned, like tree plantings and, you know, speaking up to the government and all this sort of different eco actions we can take. But doing that sort of personal inventory of ourselves and asking ourselves, like, while we're going through our days, like, what is the impact of my choices for the food that I'm eating? And I learned that like a pair of jeans takes about 9,000 liters of water to create. And I was, you know, I had disposable income as a teenager working at McDonald's, and I can't tell you the amount of clothes that I bought just because I really loved clothing. And I had no idea of the environmental impact. So it was both getting involved with organizations, but also taking a look at my own life and trying to see what actions I was actually taking a part of that weren't in alignment with my new view of sustainability.
Yeah, so you talked about your experience with the Eco Club and how you learned about all these environmental issues. So, my question is, what progress have you seen in terms of sustainability since then?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I would say it's maybe frustratingly the answer spreads in a whole bunch of different directions because there are some obvious things that I think have slid backwards, and are actually, I want to say, a little bit worse than they were when I first got started in environmentalism, which was about 17 years ago. And I would also say the tremendous differences is that throughout the years that I've been involved in this, we've just seen a lot of people get more involved. So it's been great that running our youth network, like there's been students who joined our youth network in grade 9 and have now graduated their post-secondary education and are working as like sustainability planners in different influential jobs. So it's really great to see that even though on the outside sometimes it doesn't look like there's a lot of progress, I would say the amount of people that like are activated and engaged and gaining experience and getting into positions of power and influence is really, really wonderful to see. And I'd say one of the things that has improved a lot is like the ease of access to information, that it's so easy now to share and spread news and information that would have been a lot harder to find when I first started environmentalism.
Yeah, so just on the other side of things, so what do you think is like the biggest challenge you have seen towards achieving, the sustainable development goals and in seeing progress in sustainability?
Really great question. And I would say one of the main things is simply buy-in from people, because one of the things that a lot of people in the environmental sphere are aware of is that the information and the facts are in, and the vast majority of scientists agree that we are in a very serious predicament. And I don't like to be alarming, but also to share that like there's a countdown clock that's been put in place by some of the world's leading scientists, based on the models of when climate change is going to be able to be stopped before it gets to a runaway point, and it's under 5 years. So that itself is a little concerning, and that information is available to the public. So the fact that a lot of the decision making obviously lands in politicians and different decision makers' minds, and politicians really do make their decisions based on what they think is going to be popular with the people who vote. So if there isn't a large outcry from people about their concern for the earth, a leader really wants to get reelected. So if they don't think that putting investments into sustainability funding, and you can look at our political sphere, sort of here in Canada, and recognize that there's a lot of talk about things that I wouldn't consider as important as a healthy, sustainable ecosystem that can sustain life. So, little way around answering that, like, it's people's engagement. And the fact that if you looked even a few years ago, climate change and the environment was in the top three concerns for Canadians. And right now, I think it's still in the top 10, but it's, I think, number 8 or 9. Like, it has dropped quite a bit in public consciousness and public concern. So I'd say that's the biggest barrier, because there needs to be investments. There needs to be things put into the budget for both like school boards, municipalities, for businesses. There's a lot of things that are very essential. And then if you look at sort of the blowback on things like the carbon tax here in Canada, it seems to be a very unpopular thing around a lot of different people and demographics. And that is something that like economists and climate change experts say is one of the most effective ways at limiting carbon. So if you think that the shifts our society needs to make are being criticized and limited by the public, because if the public isn't supporting of something, politicians are not going to fund them and to make decisions that will help protect things. So people's engagement, I would say, is the number one thing.
So to continue on that like same discussion, like what specific role do you think the government and policymakers should play in driving change? And I know you talked a little bit about this, but what actionable steps do you think that citizens should take to advocate for these policy reforms that support sustainability?
Really great question and a helpful thing to build on, because I would say one of the most important things is to connect with and communicate with your elected officials, whether that's your municipal councillors, if you have regional councillors, if you can contact your MP and your MPP. Just having a connection with them and letting them know that climate change is a priority for you is a almost indescribable amount of impact. And I'll say that because I've been involved in environmental advocacy for, like I said, about 17 years. And I'll just share one example that Burlington Green was advocating for a private property tree bylaw, which was basically a regulation that would stop people or limit them or put some regulations around people cutting down trees on their private property. And before the bylaw went in, you would sometimes have like 200 plus year old trees, and it just was an eyesore to the person, and they didn't like it, or they didn't want the leaves falling in their pool, and they could chop it down however they'd like. And we advocated to the city council, the Burlington City Council, who would have been the people to make that decision. And one of the things we heard back from a councillor, which wasn't an uncommon thing to hear, was that it didn't seem to be a concern to him because he didn't hear about it ever from his constituents. So constituents, just like the people who would vote for you. So I've heard of example after example of that there are groups of people that they hear from regularly. A lot of times those are developers, or those are, to be honest, like seniors. A lot of times are very active in politics because a lot of them are retired, or they're just more comfortable engaging in the process. So the fact that elected officials don't hear regularly from their constituents, letting them know that I care about this and I want you to make decisions on my behalf for this topic, when those decisions come up, whether it's a budget meeting or whether they're passing new bylaws, if they don't know from the people who vote from them that it's things that they care about, that isn't as big of a role inside of their mind. And of course, you can say that like an elected official's job is to lead their leaders, but they're also people that are in jobs and positions that rely on re-election and like popularity. So the boldness of leadership is wonderful when people are able to take those steps, but if there's always blowback and they don't hear from people to let them know that they want them to put their weight behind these issues, then it's really difficult for them to make those decisions, knowing that the people who vote for them, let's say they only hear about tax increases and that's all they hear about, then they're not going to want to put any spending on anything that doesn't seem essential. And generally, when people are concerned about budget and wealth, the environment tends to be one of the first things that are thrown out the door, unfortunately.
Yeah, so you have a lot of experience in terms of environmental education and environmental activism, and you mentioned something about a youth network earlier. So how do you motivate people, especially young people, to take action for the environment?
Great question. I would say it's funny. One of the first things that popped into my mind is you got to ask them. You have to ask them as directly as possible. And I'll just share this example that, like, when I was leading the high school eco club, I remember it was just two or three of us at the beginning, and we were thinking, like, how do we get more people involved? How do we recruit people and get them to participate? And I set up a little booth in our foyer for I think a couple days during the lunch hour, and honestly had almost nobody stop and talk to me. They either were just going to the cafeteria to eat, or they were going back to whatever they were doing. And it wasn't until I actually started going around the hallways with my clipboard and asking people directly and just saying like, "Hey, Jackson, are you free on Saturday? We need volunteers for our tree planting from 12 to 3." And I think I got like 80 something signups, like 80 something email addresses over two lunch periods the next few days that I was doing that. So one of the things I've found is, of course, you can put up posters and you can put stuff on the announcements and you can do presentations to classes and you can do presentations to the whole school and you can that you can send out newsletters and you can put it on social media. But there's something that's so effective about asking someone, like specifically to them, that like, hey, this name, are you free at this time to do this? Or like, would you be interested in planting trees? Do you want to sign up to our newsletter? Whatever that happens to be, that I have found a incredible success rate just by asking people directly instead of sending out those broad calls. And I would say even myself, when I receive them, it's like, oh, there's a tree planting event. Like they probably have enough volunteers. But if someone's like, hey, Kale, are you free on Saturday? We really need help with this. I find it goes from like 20% success rate to 80 plus percent success rate. And I would also say that awareness is really important and education, because I wasn't involved in the environment and really this sort of field or demographic until I took an eco studies course and I started to learn that a lot of the things that I loved and cared about were at risk. So that's like a basic answer. I'm sure there's more to share, but at least that's a response that I think makes sense.
Yeah, so you talked about your experience trying to convince people to engage in sustainability efforts. So when talking to like your community or people you're trying to volunteer with, what do you think is like the most misunderstood aspect of climate action?
It's a great question. And the first thing that came to me is that people really see the environment or climate action as them helping something outside of themselves. So, like, I'm helping the forest, or I'm helping the wildlife, or I'm helping the fish here. And that might be the case, but really, if each of us understood like we're doing this for ourselves and for the things that we care about, there's a big disconnect, and people forget that we are connected to the earth and that we're made out of the earth. So there was this really great story I heard from a guest speaker we had, and his name was Mike Nickerson. His name is Mike Nickerson. And he talked about this concept called the long body, and it's an indigenous wisdom teaching. And the basic summary of it is that we don't just have our physical bodies that we're in right now in this moment. We also have something called our long body or our extended body, which is out there in the earth. It's everything, all the raw materials that we're going to make up our bodies for the rest of our lives. So if you add that with another teaching that says, like, every 7 years, basically, you have a brand new body. So, our cells are constantly regenerating. Every year, we have a massive new amount of cells compared to the year before. But after 7 years, and I think after 10, there's not a single trace. But, like, the physical body that you're in right now, if you just like touch your arms, your legs, your chest, whatever, and feel how solid it is, it's actually much more of like a process. Our bodies are always constantly renewing. So, like I said, in 10 years, like the bodies that each of us are in right now and using to speak to each other will be completely gone. And we'll have a new body. We'll have new blood cells. We'll have new skin cells. We'll have new hair cells. We'll have new bone cells. We'll have a brand new body with different molecules. So, if you think about the earth as more of like an all-access bank that, like, holds all of the resources that all life forms will use to create our bodies, whether that's a badger or an eagle or a tree or a cloud. We all use the same materials to create our physical bodies. So for humans, at least, it's in the water that we drink. It's in the food that we eat that, like, literally becomes our new flesh and our cells. And it's in the air that we breathe that, like, oxygenates our blood and all of those sort of things. So people think they're sorting garbage to help something outside of themselves, or that they're helping to clean up a river because it's good for the animals. But if you really understood that helping the earth makes sense for all of us because we are the earth. There is no separation between a human being and the ecosystem out there. It's just air you haven't breathed yet, water you haven't drank yet, food you haven't eaten yet. And if you understand your entire existence relies on those raw materials, it makes it a lot more personal. And you understand that, like, we all have skin in the game here. And I also sort of related, I tell people, like, even if you don't care that much about yourself, which unfortunately some of us don't, there has to be some things you care about, whether it's like your favorite TV show, it's your favorite park, maybe you really love your grandma, maybe there's a certain food you're just obsessed with. All of those things you enjoy requires a healthy earth for you to enjoy them. All of those things I mentioned would be horrible if you had to breathe poisonous air while you were doing any of those things. So the fact that people aren't making that personal connection, I think, is one of the reasons that it doesn't seem sustainable, because anytime you're trying to do something out there for someone else, it often can fall off the burners if it's not something that you deeply understand that you are a part of. Does that make sense?
Yes, I agree with what you're saying. A lot of indigenous practices and a lot of what indigenous people do is much more environmentally friendly and much more sustainable. So I think I agree we should start adopting some of their practices to lead more sustainable lives. So to end our conversation, to change things up a little bit, if you had to describe your work in one word, what would it be?
I had a few phrases come to mind, but I want to say if I had to pick one word, I would settle it down to fun. Fun, 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 fun. Absolutely. I want that to be like the core of the work that I am doing and the work that we're all doing, because, I like the phrase that, like, this is a marathon, it's not a sprint. And I did just give the sort of startling fact of we have a less than 5-year countdown before the worst impacts of climate change are sort of irreversible, says the majority of scientists. But at the same time, I really enjoy life, and I enjoy great things about life, like some of the things I mentioned. I love my grandmas, I love food, I love my friends, I love music, I just love and enjoy being alive. And I want the work that I'm doing to help the planet to be as fun as possible so that I enjoy my life while I'm doing this. And I think in order to do that, you really have to align what your passions are with the work that you want to do in sustainability. So personally, for me, I really enjoy speaking to people. I really enjoy doing presentations. I really enjoy recruiting. I really love the creative aspects. So, no matter what you're leaning towards, whether you're more of an administration person and you just love spreadsheets, whether you're a communication person and you love writing scripts and emails, whether you're the people person, whether you're really good with numbers and you want to do budgets and the finances, there's almost an infinite amount of ways that each of us can contribute our really specific talents. And I would say that, like, when you're having fun, you're much more likely to be aligned with, like, your skills and your gifts. And biodiversity exists within humanity as well as every other species on the planet. And there's a whole bunch of different kinds of us for a reason. A lot of us are suited towards different things. So, like, my work is fun because it's aligned with who I am as a person. And I've worked really hard to A, figure out what that was. That took some time. So, don't rush yourself on that, guys. You're still young. But, like, it's all about sorting and sifting the data as you're coming into this stuff. So, try a whole bunch of different things and figure out what's the most enjoyable aspects of it for you and lean into that, because there's millions of other people all trying to make a positive effort to help the earth. And the more we can align with a way that's enjoyable, A, it's more inviting. People don't want to look and see someone struggling and sad. It's like, hey, come and help me. Like, it's not the most inviting thing, but if they feel like someone's, like, excited and they're enjoying their process and they're living in alignment with their morals and they're not destroying the earth while they're doing that, oh my goodness. So yeah, fun. I want to have fun, and I hope it's fun. Yeah.
Yeah, that's I definitely agree. You know, environmental sustainability, environmental activism, it's all really fun. I think we all enjoy it a lot, and it's something that we look forward to doing. But yeah, I think that's all the time that we have for today. So I think we're just gonna end it off here. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We learned a lot, and we hope our listeners learned a lot as well. What you said was really insightful. And I hope your experiences teach some people about what they can do in their communities and how they can live a more sustainable life.
Amazing. Thank you so much for having me. And thank you to all three of you for doing this work and having this podcast. And it really sounds like you're a real example of exactly what I was just talking about, that this is something you really enjoy, the three of you putting together. And to be able to have fun while you're helping the earth, I think is the most ideal situation. So great job doing that and being a great example and role model for other people.
We appreciate that so much. Thank you so much.